cold when mask the abstract. Step back and feel the contrast. Echoes of a broken past. Before my eyes the future flashed. Concepts slip moment past. Fear of the manifest. Waging battle on my spirit. Surrender to what's fearless. See what bodies mix of love and lust. When love was hard to touch, I toss a prayer your way. Namaste, baby, namaste. Namaste, namaste. Namaste, namaste. Namaste, namaste. Namaste, nation.
Welcome to Yoga Talk, the Yoga International podcast. I'm your host, Kat Hegberg. I'm the editor of yogainternational.com.
And I'm Michael Carlucci. I'm one of the content developers at yogainternational.com.
And our intro that you just heard was, as always, Namaste Nation by The Householders.
The Householders.
Yeah, they are dear friends of ours, and they were here a couple podcasts ago, you may remember. And we are talking about dear friends today. Dear friends and family members and lovers and spouses and all of these people, coworkers that we have relationships with.
So many relationships.
That is our topic, relationships and how they relate to yoga. Relationships not only with other people, but also with ourselves. And not only individual relationships, but, you know, our relationships with our community and with our world. And how yoga permeates all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And yoga, you know, in many ways, it is a very individual, personal practice, really.
It is.
Yeah, but the word yoga, it means union. But when we're talking about what does union mean in the context of yoga, you know, it's more, I think we're referring to the connection of the heart and mind and the body via the breath. Or I always love this quote from TKV Desikachar in his book, The Heart of Yoga, where he said that yoga, the union referred to tie the strands of the mind together. I thought that was so lovely.
That sounds great, Kat. Now, of course, we're talking about mind in the sense of the chitta being sort of like the mind heart, right?
Yeah. That in a lot of yoga and yoga-related philosophy, I believe the mind and the heart is seen as one. But in that way, you know, it's easy to think of yoga as, well, this is about my relationship with my mind, or this is about getting to know myself, svadhyaya, self-study, you know, and we don't always, I think so much about the ways that yoga relates to our external relationships. Although certainly we look at Patanjali's Yoga Sutra and we have the yamas, those mm-hmm. ethical restraints, which really, you know, we can think about a lot of those have to do with how we relate to each other.
And we have Yoga Sutra 133, Maitri, Upekshanam, and the other
Karuna,
two.
Karuna, Mudita, uh-huh. Yeah, the Brahma Viharas.
Brahma Viharas, Kat,
yeah.
You kill me.
So yoga, you know, it can help us navigate our relationships skillfully. At least I think that it can. I hope that it can. But with that, there are also, I think, times and situations where yoga, or maybe more accurately, a yoga culture can also create barriers or challenges for our relationships. So we're going to talk about that today, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when I was pondering this, I thought, you know, it's kind of hard to be a human. It's
hard to be a human sometimes.
It can be kind of hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that sometimes just the simple practice of not being a jerk to people and people, including ourselves, like not being a jerk to ourselves, that can be way more challenging than, you know, a one-handed Ekapada Galavasana.
Totally. I mean, not being a jerk, that implies that you're restraining your sense of aggression, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And you can be aggressive to not only individuals, but you can also be aggressive to your sense of yourself, your tender heart energies. You can be a jerk to your pets. You can be a jerk to the things that you use and consume in the earth.
Yeah. And so how can we use our yoga to help us be less jerky.
Less jerky.
That is perhaps the theme of this podcast.
Restraining of the jerkiness, a jerk yama.
Yes. And, you know, when we talk about relationships, Michael, I always found kind of interesting, and I remember having this conversation with some people. A lot of times when in the past I would look up, you know, well, I want to learn how I can more skillfully navigate my relationships through yoga. I would find these articles and these resources, and they always seemed like they were geared toward people who weren't me, that I couldn't really relate to.
Mm.
It always seemed like yoga relationship resources were geared more toward, you know, married couples, specifically like the married heterosexual monogamous couples, often with children and often with presumptions about income and availability of resources. And I kind of think this is problematic because not everybody fits into those boxes. A lot of people, a lot of us don't fit into those boxes. And just as an aside, as teachers, we should be mindful of that, that not everyone fits into our same experience or demographics.
Well, you know, this is something that I've always thought was interesting, because Facebook has, how many people use Facebook now? Is it like,
oh, I don't know,
500 trillion or something like
well,
that?
Considering that is far exceeds the population of planet Earth, I'm going to say no.
So many people, but like I always kind of wondered how they only had the four characteristics for relationship. You had, you know, the
I just never filled out that box.
Single, what is it? Single, married, it's complicated, or there was, I thought, another.
Well, I think they changed it a while back, because now you can say, like, they had, that was like a big thing. Like, I remember a while back they changed it where you could say whether you were in a domestic partnership or a civil union.
Oh, okay.
And I remember there were those two specifically. So there's a lot more choices now.
That always stuck in my craw, because, you know, I think that there's so many different shades and colorings of relationship that, like,
it still won't let me say I'm in a relationship with Netflix.
Or
I keep trying.
Or your 15 cats, right?
Yeah, I don't have 15 cats.
Dear listener, Kat has no cats. She actually doesn't like them.
I'm very allergic. Yeah, my name's kind of ironic. But thanks to the internet, now I think we are hearing some more diverse voices when it comes to talking about just yoga in general, as well as yoga and relationships. But we still have a long way to go. But if you look at sites like, you know, Elephant Journal, Rebel Society, Yoga Anonymous, and they're decolonizing yoga is not really focused. I haven't seen articles there on actually yoga and relationships, but that's a great resource for actually presenting more diverse voices in the yoga community in general. And while not specifically related to today's podcast, I just recommend that in general. I love that site.
Mm.
There's actually an article on YI recently, too, that really resonated with me. It was Practices for Romance, How Yoga Can Help Us Understand Dating by Carolyn Beaton. And I love this article because she used the yamas and niyamas to explain how she was able to date a little bit more compassionately and kindly. And I guess what I really liked about it was I could sort of relate to her. I was like, this is a woman who's about my age, you know, she's single, she's dating, she doesn't really want a long-term relationship, but she wants to be ethical, she wants to be kind, and she wants to live her values, and in an arena where it's not always easy to do that, where we're always, you know, kind of trying to one-up each other sometimes, and maybe not always looking at people as fellow humans.
Well, have you ever noticed how the word yama and the bija mantra for the heart, yam, are similar?
I did not until you just said that.
And
wow.
You know, if you read the Kati Upanishad, you know that Nachiketas is visited by Lord Yama.
The god of death.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, how is the god of death also yama and related to the bija mantra of the heart?
I think the heart is yum, though.
Is it
and
yum?
So maybe yum and yam, there might be a difference.
Maybe there's a difference.
But still,
we should look into that with some of our teachers.
Yeah. Sanskrit is really interesting. And we're going off a little bit. I think that's okay. Sanskrit is really interesting like that, because you'll see two words that look alike and it might be a long vowel and a short vowel and a totally different word.
But good catch, Kai.
But again, it's off the top of my head, so I could be mistaken with that. But back to Carolyn's article, she's talking basically about dating in accordance with our ethics and being honest, kind, and intentional. We'll link to that in the show notes because I thought it was really great. I think sometimes we can, you know, we can use the yamas and niyamas and it feels like a little bit of a stretch. Like, really, does everything have to apply to that? But it doesn't feel that way at all in her piece. It feels really sincere and made me actually excited to, you know, like go out on a date and put those into action. Speaking of, well, we're on the topic of dating as far as relationships go. A lot of dating nowadays, at least most, maybe I will, at least in my experience, people I talk to, seems like it starts online. And there was an article, The Science of Online Dating, which was recently in the New York Times, or at least on their website. And I learned from that article that 1 in 10 American adults is registered with an online dating service.
1 in 10.
So that is 10% of us. And I was curious to see just like kind of how, because it's such a big part of our culture, you know, online dating. I wanted to see if there was any data relating that to yoga at all, like how I could tie that in.
Of course you did.
And of course I did. And there was actually a very recent study that was done by Caitlin Roper over at Wired Magazine. And she conducted it with help from OkCupid and Match.com. And they used the data from those sites to find out, like, well, how can you make the best profile, like the most successful profile on a dating website, whatever that means.
Let me guess. It has to have something to do with yoga and puppies and surfing.
You read the article.
Yeah.
Here, so it's not that, I don't know about the puppies, maybe, but that's not that far off. And they found the key words that typically made people seem more attractive. And for both men and women, yoga was right up there. Actually, yoga and surfing were the two that were right up there.
Yoga, the article said it was for both men and women.
Yeah, for both men and women. So yoga practice, or, you know, presumably it was definitely seen as an attractive quality. And meditation, actually, it made the women's list, but not the men's list, which I thought was kind of interesting.
We were talking about this a little bit before the podcast, and I'm not sure if we're reading those statistics right, because I'm just wondering if the meditation was flipped, like if it was that the women found meditation interesting in the men, but the men maybe something else for the women.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll link to that article. And it wasn't also clear either. It seemed all very kind of heteronormative to me, this study.
Heteronormative.
Yeah. So,
heteronormative and onomyonormative, I might add.
Yeah, that is Michael's word, meaning very external body focused. So we'll link to this little infographic that they made, Wired Magazine, so you guys can look at that yourself and see. But I thought it was interesting that yoga scored so highly. There's another recent study, actually. This is being studied a lot, and this was researchers from Queen Mary University of London. They kind of wondered the same thing. And they analyzed, they went through 4,000 studies, and they analyzed 86 of them, and they found basically all of these traits that people, you know, found attractive. And they found that basically, the quote says that men prefer physical fitness and women gained via yoga, aerobics, and gym, not via rugby and bodybuilding.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
And that just made me cringe to no end. And it reminded me why I don't really like to say that I do yoga on my dating profiles. Because there's just... there's something about it that I think that it can be easy for yoga to kind of be sexualized, mm-hmm. in a lot of ways, or kind of even just romanticized or stereotyped in a lot of ways that I'm not really comfortable with. And I struggle with that, because for me, my yoga practice is very important to me. It's my job. It's part of who I am. It's something that I prioritize, and that if I'm going to be in any sort of relationship with someone, I want them to know, like, hey, this is an important part of who I am. But also, like, there's that sense of not wanting to just be like, hey, everybody, I do yoga. You know, it feels like I'm cheapening yoga a little bit.
I know, which is, like, yeah. To me, like, yoga is a lot like doing the dishes. It's like, you just do it.
But there are yet still yoga-specific dating sites that, and I've come across these a little bit, just, you know, seeing ads for them here and there, and I never really paid much attention to them until I started researching for this podcast.
Well, got it. You know, if 1 in 10 Americans have online dating and everybody seems to be into yoga, this seems like a gold mine, actually.
Yeah, there's yogapassions.com, omsingles.com, and yogaromance.com.
Omsingles.com.
Yeah, actually, I read an interview.
Shouldn't be Ohm Doubles?
Hopefully, I guess the goal is maybe to become an Ohm Double. But there is an interview with the founders at Rebel Society, which I thought was really interesting, that we'll also link to. And, you know, I'm kind of reluctant to try something like that. I think, I don't know. Are you familiar with the cool girl trope?
I looked it up a little bit, but I couldn't find the actual trope.
Yeah, yeah. So if you've read Jillian Michaels' Gone Girl this past year, or seen the movie, I guess these past years, it's been out since 2012, 13 or something, or seen the movie, or even just read a magazine article recently, you might be familiar with the cool girl trope. And the trope, to kind of put it mild, like really condense it, is this idea of the cool girlfriend that likes all the same things that the boyfriend likes and never complains or nags about anything. And there's lots of articles on why that is pervasive in our culture, but why it is problematic. And
why it never happens, speaking as a dude, just saying.
Well, we could argue about that till the cats come home, but we're talking about cats.
The cats are herded.
Yeah, that would take a while. But so there's reasons why this is problematic. But she also mentions in the book Gone Girl, or the fictional character that's discussing this in her monologue, mentions that this cool girl trope can take a lot of in different incarnations, depending on, you know, what the boyfriend is like. And in yoga, I think it can be easy to kind of fall into these stereotypical yoga cool girl tropes. And I personally feel like if I were on a site that was like yoga singles, that I would be more inclined to pretend to be somebody I was not, you know, and to be like, yeah, I love juice cleanses. I love drum circles. And Michael's laughing because I really dislike those things.
But I didn't know you didn't like drum circles.
Not so much a fan of drum circles.
Actually, I'm a musician. I don't like drum circles either. Sounds like shoes in a dryer. That's
well, I see how they can be fun. I mostly don't like drum circles because I can't play anything. Mm-hmm. And so usually I'm sitting there and somebody hands me a tambourine.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, oh,
and you hand
guys.
Them a green juice, right?
Yeah, exactly. But so yoga, dating, being a yogi doesn't make dating any easier is what I would say. But outside of romantic relationships, I think that community is a really big draw of yoga. At least it is for me. And at least it's what, like, I mean, I love to practice by myself in my room, do my personal practice. And a lot of times what keeps me going to a yoga class is not so much that I want to do something harder or different than what I'm doing, but it's just that I want that community. And I want to, you know, make friends, make some like-minded friends that share a similar interest.
A little bit of the sangha.
Yes, sangha. Yeah.
Is it sangha or satsang? I can never remember.
I think
like the Buddhists are sangha and the yogis are satsang or one of the others. I can't remember.
I think sangha is like a community, and satsang is like when you gather together in community and maybe listen to a teacher. But again, that's just my experience and perception.
I always wondered that.
Sangha could be that too, I suppose. But yeah, so yoga friendships. I know a couple years ago, I moved all the way across the country to a new city, and I didn't know anybody. Well, I knew maybe one or two people, but not super well. And so I moved to the city, don't have any friends there yet, anything like that. The first thing I do is I go to the yoga studio. Then I decide I'd already done a teacher training, but I want to sign up for a teacher training. And honestly, a big reason why I signed up for this teacher training was to make friends. And I did. Every single friend that I made, pretty much living in Portland, I made through my teacher training that I did, or through people that I met in teacher training. And it was a great resource and a great way to connect with community. And yeah, that was through yoga.
I might have to try that, actually.
Yeah, I recommend it, definitely. If you're a yoga practitioner, you know, then try it out if you move into a new city. And community is so important. And I think, you know, in our individualistic culture, it's easy to forget that. But there is the risk, of course, that then we get into our little yoga bubble. Like I say, well, every person that I met through yoga. Well, then that really does limit my community and limit the diversity of my community. And it limits my perceptions. So that can be a problem as well.
God, it's so hard, though, Kat, you know, to meet people. And where I grew up, it's like there were two places you could meet people, were the church or the bar.
Yeah, that's me too.
And, you know,
same
like
here. We're always, yeah.
If you're the kind of person that has, as you know, like a deal breaker, substance abuse, well, the bar. Is pretty much
not an option.
Kind of like walking all over that. So like, how do you actually, you know, meet people if you're not adept at that, or we're so lonely?
I mean that really is a big thing. Like, it really is hard to meet people and make friends a lot of times. And so starting with a common interest, you know, whether it's yoga, whether it's a book club, whether it's anything like that, you know, you go to meetup.com and you see like who else likes these things where I live, whether it's Dungeons and Dragons or my family's big into that.
But then of course, if you're going to yoga class with the intention of meeting people, then you're sort of weaving into the fabric of your experience that intention, which may conflict or may even conjoin the intention of actually doing yoga. So I guess it's just important to be clear about what you're doing.
But I still think that community aspect is an important part of yoga, because we do, like, we are human beings and we live in this world in these bodies. And we, you know, I think that there's a human need for companionship in at least some way, or to connection. And so we could sit and we can do practice till the cats come home. We can, you know, do, and we can become very good at our practice, but that doesn't, I think, erase our need for other humans to share our lives with.
And yoga can actually, because as you said earlier, yoga means union, but the cognate English word, of course, is join.
To yoke. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think making friends sometimes can be especially hard when you're a yoga teacher, because there is the importance of keeping that kind of student-teacher boundary in some ways. Like, we don't want to use our students to as a source of validation, or, you know, as a means of obtaining some sort of, you know, validation or anything that we feel like we're not getting in our lives.
Also, it may be a good thing for anything we do.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I don't think that that's healthy necessarily. But I think that I used to, at least speaking personally, take this a little bit too far and think that I had to be very distant and very removed, and that I couldn't even like really be myself. And then I noticed a lot of my teachers, people that I, you know, these women that I really admired and was close to, that I began to see them as my friends too. Mm-hmm. Not just as, you know, authority figures or even really as authority figures, but more like as older sisters or as just people that I really truly enjoyed spending time with, not just because they knew stuff that I wanted to know, but because they were really cool people. And I began to think like, well, yeah, I'm a person and it's okay not to know everything. And I don't need to present myself as any sort of authority figure. And I can just chill out a little bit. And I found that that's when I started to really make friends with other yoga teachers. And we'd go to each other's classes and we would make friends with people in our classes. And we would, you know, we developed this community in this way. And actually, Jay Brown has this really great article that I want to link to in the show notes called Yoga Teacher as Friend that really resonated with me and can probably explain this far more eloquently than I could right now. But that is something that, and I'm curious too, if listeners, if you have any experience, if you found that as a yoga teacher, especially if you move to a new community and, you know, you start teaching, if that can be a barrier as far as, you know, making yoga friends. Also, you know, we have our relationship not just with our community inside our yoga bubbles, but all of us living in this world, pretty much, we have a relationship with our community outside of yoga. And in what ways can we, as teachers and studio owners and students, step outside the yoga bubble and serve our communities? And in what ways, I think, do we need to acknowledge our privilege and the lack of diversity in the yoga community that is still very apparent and very problematic? And how can we, you know, kind of check ourselves in that way? I think that that's important.
I think that's very important, Kat, because, you know, there's this idea that eventually when you attain some kind of a healing, that your spiritual practice and your yogasana and your yoga sadhana sort of radiates out from your center into your relationships at home, friends, things like this, but then also out into the way that you touch the earth and the way that products that you may use touch the earth. We're bigger and more interconnected than just our 2x6 area of compassion made of like sustainable latex fibers and things like that.
Exactly. Yeah. That I think that, you know, kind of off the mat is an expression that we tend to overuse in the yoga community. But it really is about taking it off the mat. It's about, you know, living our yoga. A friend of mine said something recently that really resonated, where he said that, you know, what good is it if you're, you know, like rocking your arm balances for an hour a day if you're just a jerk to everybody the rest of the time? And really, what is that?
Kat, one of our great faculty members here at the HI actually said something that just really stuck with me, is that almost the very intention to do yoga might potentially be harmful.
Really?
It certainly needs to actually be looked into about what your intention is for doing the yoga, but it's almost like for some people, you don't feel good enough as you are, so you have to do a thing heroically to change who you are. Like, oh, I haven't had much sleep, so I'm going to go do yoga nidra. And it's like, that's actually almost insulting your experience as it is. It's like a little disruptive. So it's like, what if that were all there was? What if your lack of sleep, or what if your lack of being able to get in that, what did you call it, ekapada rajakapotasana?
I think the very beginning of the podcast, I had a reference to a one-handed ekapada kalavasana, but I don't know that a one-handed ekapada kalavasana is really even, I'm sure somebody can do it.
So I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is that, like, we have to like look at our intention for doing yoga, because I mean, like, if you're not okay with who you are as you are, then you might bring the intention to harm your beloved nature into your yoga too. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really good point, that it affects us as well as other people. So we talked about yoga and how it permeates our lives, or how we can live our values in the context of dating, and then in, you know, friendships and community relationships. But what about like long-term relationships, like marriage or other types of long-term romantic relationships? And I wonder, the question that always comes up to me is it better or worse to be in a relationship with a fellow yogi?
I guess, again, it comes back to what your intention is, because it's like, Kat, I mean, like, if I were to hang out with you for any length of time, you know way more about yoga than I do. So, like, what are we going to talk about? Maybe we should just go have some jalapeno poppers.
Can we have jalapeno poppers after the podcast?
Yeah, I think awesome. So.
Oh, wait, are those gluten-free? I don't think they are. Maybe we'll find some gluten-free jalapeno poppers in Scranton. That's the nearest city.
Scranton?
Yeah.
Yes, it was where the office was supposedly set.
That's true. And they did have jalapeno poppers. That must be where it came from. Guys, we just figured out a joke from like a sitcom 10 years ago. Right. We're really excited right now. So looking at, is it better or worse to be in a relationship with a fellow yogi? On the one hand, this is from the interview with Rebel Society's interview with Om Singles founder Oliver Andreas. And he says that when asked, you know, why he founded Om Singles, he says that, quote, after having taken our 200-hour yoga training, we have seen marriages and relationships dissolve because of the realization that their partner does not share the same beliefs and is not willing to support them on their journey. So there's that sense of like, well, I want somebody that understands. I want somebody who supports me. I want to be in a relationship with somebody who, you know, knows, okay, this person's going to get up at 6 a.m. and practice, and that's cool, and I value that too.
I mean, anybody who starts Nadi Shodhanam on the right side instead of on the left, deal breaker.
Doesn't it matter time of day, though, isn't it? Anyway. But then on the other hand, and I was trying to think of the other hand, and I actually remembered this quote from ballet dancer Maria Tallchief. Do you know who she is?
I do know who Maria Tallchief is.
My mother used to have this photo of her that she had that was from a calendar, and I always look at it when
I was little
girl.
I love Maria Tallchief.
Yeah, and I love this quote. I found this on the Wikipedia article. I think I heard it somewhere recently, too, but I think it's legit, regardless that I copied it from Wikipedia, because I've heard it numerous times. And they asked her why she was drawn to or fell in love with her third husband, who she was married to for 50 years. And she said, quote, that he was very happy, outgoing, and knew nothing about ballet. Refreshing. And so I think, you know,
I kind of get it, though, because it's like, you know, sometimes you just want to have peace in your life, peace in your relationships, peace in your personal relationship with yourself, but as well as with your loved ones. And oftentimes, I don't know if you've noticed, Kat, but sometimes people have the intention to try to be right about things.
Really? People do that?
People do that a lot. And then an argument becomes more about a talking point than it is about the energy of the heart. And so if you know a lot that your partner also knows, you know, the same field, then that might actually happen a little bit more regularly.
Well, you know, and if your job is related to yoga, like if you're a studio owner or if you are yoga podcasters or, you know, yoga, we work for a yoga company in other ways too, of course. But like sometimes it can be a little bit like, okay, I just want to go home and not think about yoga for a little bit. Mm. So I could definitely see that as well. So I think, again, there's no perfect answer to that, but it's just about living compassionately and using your practice to help you maybe tune in and learn more about who you are so you can live life in your life, whatever life you want to live, in accordance with what really matters to you, what's really important to you, whether that's being in a romantic relationship, whether it's not being in a romantic relationship, or whether it's, you know, numerous other things. Other relationships, too, that we have in our lives, of course, include our family relationships with children and with parents. And we actually have a lot of articles on Yoga International. And I might be, I apologize if I'm glossing over this a little bit, but I am not a parent and neither is Michael. So I don't feel that I can speak to this super great, but we have a lot of articles written by people who can, specifically about how to incorporate yoga and yogic principles into your family life. And, you know, how to share these things that are important to you with your children without forcing them upon them. One of my favorites actually is an article written by Sherry Bester that is called Who is This Yoga Lady and What Has She Done With My Mom? And it's a short little article, but I like how she talks about how, you know, like when we first start practicing yoga, sometimes we just want like everybody, let's drink the green juice. Let's wear the organic everything. Let's, you know, and if you're a little kid and you're used to like eating your Snicker bars after school and watching SpongeBob SquarePants, you're like, what is going on? My life is being uprooted. I don't want to eat grass. Help. And Sharing Talk gives you some great tips. And I think her main point is just, you know, live your values. Like, you know, maybe sure, give your kid like a little bit more healthy food here or there, like, you know, but you don't have to force them to do yoga. Like, if you're doing your yoga and it's important to you, then you're setting a good example. And, you know, not everybody has to be a yogi, but I think that what's far more important is that we set examples of being true to ourselves and of being kind and of being loving and of being nurturing.
Authentic presence.
Yeah, authentic presence. And kids really resonate with that. And then speaking of family, I always come back to that famous Ram Dass quote. You know the one I'm talking about?
Kat, I know the one you're talking about.
I love this quote. And I try to remember it every year before I go and visit for Christmas time. He says, if you think you're enlightened, go spend a week with your family.
Oh my God, this is so true.
And because, you know, like I think that I'm so grown up and that I'm so adult and that I'm so, you know, like whatever. And then as soon as I fly home, I'm like, all of a sudden my brain is like, hello, you are 15 years old again.
Yeah.
And I remember this one time I had been meditating in an ashram. I had been, you know, the day before I had this beautiful meditation session that I just remember was so wonderful and just so really, you know, I felt very calm and peaceful and centered. And I was like, life is beautiful. Everything is wonderful. And then I go and I hang out with my sister, who I actually get along with my sister really, really well. But I was maybe 26 or something, and she said something that annoyed me. And I had a bagel in my hand, and I just tossed the bagel at her like I would have when we were little kids.
Wow.
I was laughing. I was like, oh my gosh. I just, my brain was like, you are in this environment that you were in when you were 7. You are now 7. Mm. And of course, I was horrified. Like, I did not mean to toss that bagel at you. I'm so sorry. Mm. But you know, you can go from meditating in an ashram to tossing a bagel at your sister in 24 hours.
Yeah, that's the how do you do that skillfully, you know? Because that's the thing. It's like the practice is good and you can feel it's healing, but then how do you like integrate it? Mm. How do you like weave it sort of into your, you know, your life in a, I'm going to use the word again, skillful manner?
Yeah.
And like that's, I think, the golden key, if you can figure that out.
Yeah, that's what I think. That's the practice, is trying to figure that out.
Mm.
I think that it's that constant reminder. It's like just when you think you've got it, you remember that you don't. But then also there's so much more to learn, and there's so much more to learn about who you are, which really brings us back to yoga being so much about our relationship with ourselves. You know, that we have this practice that encourages us to go inside and look inside and study ourselves. Like we hear the term swadhyaya, self-study. And I'm always reminded by my teachers that it doesn't mean study by yourself. So there is that community aspect, but it means the study of yourself. And of getting to know yourself better and who you are and what you value and what you're capable of and how deep down inside, like, we are really awesome,
all of us.
And not just us as individuals, not just me, but you are too.
Yeah.
And to be able to see that in each other is, that to me is what it's all about.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to wrap up our discussion on yoga and relationships, unless you have anything else you would like to add.
Well, we didn't really solve anything, but I think we talked about some good stuff.
We did. I think we did too. So we have a listener email to read to you. And this is one that Michael and I received from a listener, and I should have asked how to pronounce it. I apologize if I mispronounce it. Brika, B-R-I-K-A. And she says that, I recently stumbled across the Yoga Talk podcast and have thus far found it very helpful to hear certain topics discussed that have confused me or frustrated me about practicing yoga, specifically in the U.S., specifically the myths and body image episodes. Thank you. I have often considered going to yoga teacher training to deepen my practice and not necessarily to become a teacher. But in the meantime, I wonder if you could recommend any books to read to deepen both my physical yoga practice as well as the philosophy. I have had yoga teachers share excerpts and passages from certain books that have been meaningful to their practice and would love a few recommendations to start me down the path of self-study. Thank you. Well, thank you so much for that kind email. We appreciate when we hear feedback, and it's always nice to hear nice feedback, but all feedback is appreciated. And we thought we wanted to read this one on the air because perhaps some of you might like to hear some of our favorite yoga resources too. Michael?
Well, Kat, I do have some ideas about that. I mean, I've lived at the Himalayan Institute now for 3 years, and everybody is so steeped in the classical tradition of yoga that you never know when you're going to get into a conversation over dinner about the kleshas or the mullahs or the, you know, like what svadhyaya means versus vichara.
Yeah, and, so community, you're saying.
Yeah, community, basically. Course, yeah. And that's been the most valuable. It's like the school of hard knocks, kid. I didn't go to school. I learned it in the school of hard knocks. It's like yoga is the school of hard knocks, is living here. So yeah, community.
I would definitely echo that one. And I would also say, just as far as like books and things go, some of the books that I've recommended in teacher trainings and that I've really found helpful. Hatha Yoga Illustrated by Brooke Boone and Martin Kirk is one that I really like, just because it's really simple. It's got all of these asanas laid out and got some really like good, useful, but not overly complicated alignment cues. So I recommend that one a lot. Yoga Mastering the Basics by my teachers and Michaels, Sandra Anderson and Rolf Sobick. That's always a classic. Really like that one. Mark Stevens has a couple of books that are geared toward yoga teachers. In particular, Teaching Yoga and the one on sequencing. I can't quite remember that, but it's easy to find if you look them up on Amazon. So really enjoy those. Let's see. Donna Farhi, The Breathing Book. That one is fabulous for pranayama. As far as yoga philosophy goes, there's The Heart of Yoga, The Philosophical World of Hatha Yoga by Doug Keller. Also, Doug Keller's Yoga Therapy Manuals, Yoga as Therapy, both volumes, really, really excellent. The Yoga Tradition, Its History, Literature, Philosophy, and Practice by Georg Fierstein. That is a fabulous one that I just keep going back to again and again. There's also a book, it's an Ashtanga book called Ashtanga Yoga, Practice and Philosophy by, and I never quite know how to pronounce his name. I've not heard it said, so I apologize. But I believe Gregor Mahle, M-A-E-H-L-E. And I picked up that book many years ago. And even though I'm not really an Ashtanga practitioner, I still found it really useful, especially this part about the psoas in there I really liked. Let's see, anything else? Yoga, The Poetry of the Body by Rodney Yee. That's just a great practice manual, as is Journey into Power by Baron Baptiste, Yoga Resource by Darren Rhodes, and The Four Desires too, Rod Stryker's The Four Desires.
That's a great one.
That is a great book as far as philosophy and even just self-reflection goes.
Very, very good book.
Great. Anything else to add, Michael?
I don't think I have anything else to add, Kat.
Okay, well, we are going to take you out with the householders in just a moment. If you have any comments, questions, show ideas, if you want to share something that you learned about yoga through relationships or about relationships through yoga, we would love to hear that. If there's anything that we missed, that we left out, let us know. You can email us at yogatalk@yogainternational.com. And here are the householders.
Shakes force arise, bow to the now, word vibrates in the sound.